Taurus, and welcome to your 2015 into 2016 birthday reading. My name is Eric Francis, your astrologer, with some charts in my hand and some ideas to share with you. Just to give you a brief overview, the way that I do this kind of reading is that I will do two recordings that predominantly focus on astrology. And then in a third recording, I usually sleep on it and then do some afterthoughts. I'll usually have a couple of things that come to me after I've done the main body of the astrology, and then I will cast the Voyager Tarot for you, a beautiful, good news, solution-oriented, modern, clear-headed tarot deck. I'll tell you more about this deck when I'm using it, but one of the reasons I just love it is because having used probably somewhere in the order of 100 different tarot decks, it is one of the most responsive and clear, solution-oriented decks I've ever used. Decks all have different vibrations. They have different feelings in your hands and so forth. And James Wanless, Taurus, beautiful guy, did something very helpful for all of us. Okay, so in the spirit of that, using divination for something helpful for all of us, I'm going to depend on some other charts than I normally use in doing birthday readings, particularly because the defining feature of the year for those under Venus-ruled signs, such as your own, there's only two really, though Pisces would count, so there'd be Venus and Libra are the officially Venus-ruled signs. And then Pisces, my sign, has Venus exalted, so there's a strong Venus presence, but I think the strongest for Taurus, because that's pretty much your planet. Libra has Saturn associated with it, Pisces has Jupiter and Neptune. You get this one awesome, interesting goddess, and Venus is going to be retrograde for part of the year. The retrograde begins on July 25th. It ends on September 6th. Venus is retrograde the least of all the planets. That doesn't mean it goes retrograde the fewest times, which it does. But what I mean is that it is retrograde the least number of days of all days by percentage, about 8% of the time, compared to something like Mercury, which is retrograde somewhere around a quarter of the time, and or 20%, and then like Pluto, 40%, and so on. Venus, because it's so close to the Earth, is retrograde the least of all. It sort of tracks the Earth in its orbit, and Mars is, of course, the second least retrograde planet. So these retrogrades are meaningful. They're special. They are important review periods. They are important transitional times. And they also mean that Venus spends more time than normal in one particular sign of the zodiac. So I'm going to focus on that, though my plan is to work my way up to that. I'm going to start with the new moon chart. We've just passed the Scorpio full moon. We're about to experience on May 18 the new moon in your sign, Taurus. That happens also to be the same day that Mercury stations retrograde. And so there's that is a presence in your chart, and that adds a theme for you, an important theme, because of the importance of Mercury and the sign Gemini in your chart, which is the second house involving resources, money, and in your case, ideas around money, and in particular, what I like to think of as being financial literacy, a concept that's not very often spoken of. There is this bizarre taboo around money and the discussion of money and information about handling money and amounts of money, and banks have that odd sensation of being like a funeral parlor, which is I think that they're both kind of eighth house institutions, and there's just this whole somber thing about money. But in your chart, there is the clear reminder to be conversant about money. That is because you have Gemini on the second house. And the second house is your resources, beginning with your body, your voice, very important resource for anyone born under the sign Taurus or with a strong Taurus signature in their chart. And then by extension, your possessions, which are a combination of material possessions these days, which you might think of as media possessions, and then also your ideas. So everything sort of spreading out from your most important possession, your physical body, then spreading out into all the different abstractions of that, you know, the pots and pans that you use to cook. That's a very important thing as far as a possession is concerned. And because Gemini is on the second house, it's the second sign away from yours, it's the next sign from Taurus, the story of that second house, which is always about resources, in your case, is told through the filter of Gemini. And so where there is Gemini, there is a conversation. Where there is Gemini, there are your neighbors and your siblings. Very important resource, right? We forget that now that we pretend that, you know, all wealth comes from the paycheck or the assistance check or something like this. We forget that vital resource of the neighbors around and whom we live and with whom we conduct, hopefully, much of our trade. Doesn't happen so much like that anymore, but for you, there is this reminder that the more you build your sense of commerce around something that's very close to you, very local, everything within walking distance, and conducting business with people whose names you know, really, whose names and faces you recognize because they are your neighbors, that is one way to concentrate your resources, to be able to build your base of resources. But there's also something very important going on with Mercury and Gemini in particular, which is to keep a flow going and to remember that there is a cycle of resources. There is an ebb and flow of resources, but that your main kind of consciousness task is to build a foundation for yourself that is only subject to so much flow, to build a kind of an endowment for yourself, however that might be. And you may have a tendency not to do that because of this flow thing, this ebb and flood and the kind of mercurial nature that money and resources have for you. Now, I recognize that this contradicts some of the teachings of astrology books, which talk about Taurians being, really good with money. I have actually found that not to be a dependable statement astrologically. It doesn't mean that it's not going to be that way if you make it that way. But what I would suggest here is that this really needs to be a focused, concentrated path of learning, a thing that you do because you want to make it work for you. And so among, skipping right to Gemini and right to this interesting situation you've got in Gemini, which is basically in the new moon chart, Mars is in Gemini and Mercury is in Gemini stationing retrograde, meaning that Mercury will spend a lot of time in your second house and Mars will spend a good period of time in your second house. And this is encrypted in your solar return chart. Again, using the new moon as your solar return chart. I'll make some allowances for other possibilities, but let's focus on one chart here. Two messages are coming through. One is to be aggressive about your finances, to assert yourself around money. That does not necessarily mean to keep hitting up the same person for a raise or the same organization for a raise, but rather to use your mind and use your ingenuity and to work your environment and your resources. And you have a lot of resources indicated. Gemini is a sign that I consider to be associated with lucid, at times luminously brilliant intelligence. It is the kind of thing where if you apply your mind to something, you get a result from it. And if you apply your mind to resources, you get a result. Now, one thing I will say that Taurians, in my experience, which is not that limited with them, is that they are very good at working with the resources that they have and still managing to live well. So Taurus is good at one thing, and that is frugality. So that's the side where there is truth to the resourceful part, because it actually does help to be able to do with less. But in your case, this year, now, the implication is the time is to learn how to assert yourself and to assert the resources that you have, whatever they might be. I consider one's talents to be among one's most important resources. And one of the exercises that if I ever have an astrology workbook that I'm going to put in there is what I call a talent inventory, to look consciously at what your talents are, to list them out, to know what they are, and to know the different facets of what your talents are. So, for example, if you are an actor, that might also include your voice and voiceover. It might include modeling. It might include acting. And then there's a diversity of other skills and talents associated with it, many of which may not be the, quote, thing you want to do for the rest of your life, but just because you work a trade show as a model doesn't mean you're doing that for the rest of your life. Usually it's a one-day gig. You collect a good check and you put the money in the bank or buy something or pay some bills, and that's what you do. And so the thing with Gemini is that it is the most helpful and clear sign of diversity, of multiplicity, of there being more than one option. And so as you take advantage of that Mars and Gemini factor, look at the possibilities, look at the different options, and focus on as many of them as you can reasonably without diluting your energy too much. But it never hurts to consider what the possibilities are. And part of being independent or more independent is knowing what is in your sample bag, your the bag of things that you have to offer that you can pull out and say, I can do that. And in the spirit of improvising, the answer is yes, you can do that, and then you figure out how to do it. Now, with Mars in Gemini here in the second house, as I mentioned, the second house is about resources, and Gemini talks about local neighbors, brethren, one's village. Those are within whom of, say, delivering a message. This would not be like airmail message. This would be more like somebody runs across town with the message, or you go across town, deliver the message, or pay a call. And this is going to be helpful. Focus on your community. Focus on those with whom you converse, and be open with and available to anyone you speak to. Have the conversation. Ask them if they know of anything that is going on. Break that taboo on quote-unquote money, and have the conversation be about, say, for example, participation, being useful, what you can do for them, how you may be able to assist one another. And remember that there is always another side to the story with Gemini. There's always some opportunity, and the thing to do is to work with a relaxed and loose, conversant idea framework rather than a fixed viewpoint type of idea framework. Not sure if I'm conveying that idea very well, but as you move through life, you may notice that yourself and others have two main modes. One mode is a fixed viewpoint mode, and the other view is a mobile viewpoint, a portable viewpoint mode that is conversant in many different languages and many different frames of reality. And so I would suggest strongly applying that mobile viewpoint approach, and know that you can, there are many ways to approach a question, and they especially involve talking, because Gemini is about talking. Now, speaking of talking, and being the one who starts the conversation, Mars, and you know, being the one who is willing to take the risk and assert yourself to make an effort to try, Mars, Mercury is going to be retrograde on the day of the new moon. Really interesting. And so that is part of the story of these coming four or five seasons for you. And that is pretty interesting. I'm about to do the Mercury retrograde reading, and this is going to have a lot to say for us. And for Taurus, that's the second house, again, Mercury retrograde. So the ruler of your second house is retrograde in your second house. And this is calling for a review. I think it's productive to do these things as a kind of a therapy exercise, a self-knowledge exercise, and also a values inventory to find out where exactly the values that you have came from. And so with Mercury retrograde in the second house, this is saying, take your history when it comes to money. What is the history of your ideas with money? How far back can you go? What is your first recollection of money? It's interesting. I'm wondering if I've ever done this. One of my earliest recollections with money was I was riding with my parents, and we stopped the car to get a roll of stamps. And my dad went into the post office and came out with a roll of 100 5-cent stamps, and it was $5. And I must have been pretty young, because this seemed like an astonishing amount of money to me. It was not in like 1801. This was in the 1960s, that $5 seemed like a lot of money to me, and it was associated with postage stamps. What is your earliest recollection of money? What does it say to you? What did people tell you about money? I remember being told, never say how much money you have, never being told why. You shouldn't say that, but I was told never say that. Why? The question is why. I was told never leave money out in your house. Someone might steal it. Ah, again, a value. Why that? And why would those people be in your house anyway? So go back and take your history. Write this, journal this history of money out, and see what you can come up with as your earliest recollection. To give you an astrological metaphor of why I'm suggesting that, Mercury often rules childhood. There are things that are very childlike about Mercury, and that there can be a kind of a concept of that which is contained in childhood and childhood memories, and the retrograde of Mercury emphasizes that point now. While you're doing the history of money, there is likely to be also presenting itself, and by the way, this is likely to come up organically, but you might not follow the thread without a prompting, a history of what you value. Now, this is a little more complex, because values are a complicated idea, and they're often transparent. It's often true that people are given values that they don't know that they are given, like all the people who don't know that they're racist in some way, but it's clearly they are, but they just haven't identified that as a value, therefore it's verging on impossible to resolve it. Well, we all have values like that, values that we were given. They may come in the form of things we were told, beliefs we were imparted with, expectations that we were given, affirmations or doubts about ourselves that we were given. And I would say take this back as early into early childhood as you can, though that is probably the most difficult place to remember these things. It's also one of the most important places to remember. And you know, while you're at it, you can infer the values that you were given by the values of your parents, because they were the environment that you grew up in, the environment that you lived in, and where you were picking up values by osmosis. You were around the transaction of money a lot, and you can just observe your parents. You know, were they honest about money? Were they not honest about money? And by the way, the honesty about money question comes up in the form of Mercury square Neptune. This whole Mercury retrograde is square Neptune. And so there is a question, it's a real question, it's a good question, about honesty about finances. There are people whose inclination is to tell the truth about their finances, and you just ask them a question, they give you an answer. And there are people who are inclined to lie about their finances. The most insidious lies, though, are the ones that we tell ourselves. And the lies that we tell ourselves are often about how much money we have and what we can afford and can't afford, and what is important and what is not important. So this is an area to explore. And when we have a Mercury-Neptune square, as we have, and it's a long one, and it's in all the Taurus solar return charts to some degree or another, and I think it's pretty darn interesting, is that this is a sort of a truth-seeking exercise that's likely to reveal itself in layers. That is, something is going to seem true one day, and then something else will seem more true the next day, or there'll be clarifying information or light shed on something, or you will get to the point of having a question about something, and then some circumstance will answer the question, and it is, it's like, ah, but it really helps to pay attention. And these stations of Mercury, when Mercury slows to a stop and stays put, not for very long, but it'll occupy 1 degree for a day or so, there is often what I call a truth revealed effect. I've had some very interesting truths come out, like what's really going on here around the time of a Mercury station. It's almost like you squeeze the universe and you get a drop of real juice, and that juice comes in the form of a discovery of something that was concealed or that was behind the scenes. Now, Mercury and soon to be Mars square Neptune are also suggesting that you be on the lookout for self-defeating concepts, ideas, and actions. There are all kinds of self-defeating concepts, ideas, and actions. And when there's a square to Neptune, that is astrology saying, pay attention to them, but also saying, these things may be difficult to see, and you may need to make a conscious study of your existence, down to the point of taking notes, especially when there's a squares to Neptune. That's all about making discoveries and then remembering that you remembered that thing, remembering to note them in some way so that they don't disappear into that Neptune memory hole, that you actually have this information to work with, because I can promise you that it's information that you need, information that is hard won. And much of it involves, in this particular scenario, your ideas about money as associated with your profession. And I will say that one of the things about Taurus that is not noted is a certain altruism around one's profession and the willingness to do with less so that you can do more that is the right thing, that you can do more that is, sorry, that is a dog scratching, hold on. So Pisces, and the willingness to have a kind of a self-sacrificing attitude toward professional income, that would mean, for example, not necessarily doing the thing that is going to get you big bucks, but rather doing the thing that you want to do, the thing that is the right thing to do, or in your case, the thing that is the most creative thing to do, and being willing to do with a little bit less to do that which is oriented on service and which is beautiful and that which that actually, you know, influences people in a positive way. And so the Mercury and Mars squares to Pisces and to a bunch of Pisces planets are saying, look at this and get to the bottom of this, or at least get a little, can't get to the bottom of Pisces, but you get a little closer to what you really value, and you can look for wrinkles that are in the way. Look at what people told you about what was worth money and what was not worth money. Look at what people, what examples they set for you. Look at ideas you were given that were affirming and ideas that were self-defeating, and look at the ways in which those ideas kind of bump into one another. Now, to do this may require a real sense of self-assertion. You really may need to feel like you are pushing on something that's a little sticky, or that you need to be what to you feels like aggressive or confrontational so that you can get closer to the reality of something. And that may mean being a bit argumentative. It may mean challenging your own ideas, challenging someone else's ideas. When challenged, respond in some way. When you see something that is deserving of challenging, be assertive. It is okay to be appropriately pissed off about something. It is okay to say to someone, I heard you say that, and it doesn't really make any sense, and I don't accept that idea. So there's a lot of challenging accepted ideas that I see in this chart, and this theme is going to evolve and develop over the course of the year, because it seems to just keep sort of growing and rolling, where the focus of challenging of established ideas becomes more and more kind of potent, and seems more necessary. And there may not be one big breakthrough, but there are more likely to be a series of smaller breakthroughs and discoveries. But it will be very helpful if you remember what those discoveries are. A few last points before we move on to the Venus retrograde section. One exciting thing about your charts now is that Jupiter is moving through your fourth house for much of the year. It's going to move on to the fifth house. We're going to talk a lot about the fifth house in the second session, and we're going to talk a lot about the fourth house. But right now, let's mention the fact of Jupiter in Leo. That's your fourth house because it's the fourth sign from your sign at the time of your solar return. And this is saying that home is where to make your investment. Home is an investment. Now, you may not own a place. You may rent or live with someone, or you know, share a house. But however you look at that concept, that home is an investment to both make, to actively invest in, and it's also an investment to actually draw strength from, to collect on. The implication here is that there is something that has come to fruition about your relationship with your home, and that your home is a vital resource for you to have. It's also implying strongly that your family is a vital resource, and partners show up prominently in this picture. So there is a the idea of resources again is emphasized here. Only now it shifts environment slightly to a bit beyond you, your body, your possessions, your neighborhood, and now we're talking about your physical home as an idea, and that includes the the region that you live in, as well as your family, as well as partners, or partner depending on your monogamy status. But there's something here about one very important partner at some point influencing you and appearing as a resource. If someone who loves you is willing to help, I would recommend getting over any reservations you have about accepting that help and allow that help in, because it is being offered in a spirit of generosity and in a spirit of this is the right thing. This is the right thing to be doing. There's just something that is inherently in line with the universe about this help that a partner is offering. Now, the counterbalance of that, let's say the place where you may have doubts could show up as Saturn in Sagittarius and then later in the year about to retrograde back into Scorpio and then back into Sagittarius. And here is what I would suggest about that concept of Saturn, an important planet in any chart, no matter what that chart is, spending time in Sagittarius and so close to the line between your relationships and what you might think of as the consecration of your relationships through an economic, sexual, or contractual basis. All of them are closely related. And so what you've got is Saturn working the line between Scorpio and Sag. That's your seventh and eighth house. And there is something here about your relationship solidifying and also something about your relationships taking an increasingly spiritual foundation rather than an increasingly emotional foundation. Now, how do I say that a different way? I'll use astrology as a handy metaphor, since that's what we all came here for, here in the 21st century, to read astrology. Scorpio is the sign opposite your sign. And the implication there is that your relationships have a kind of a hormonal magnetism. It is a fully appropriate way for Taurus to get him or herself involved in a relationship. You know exactly who you're attracted to. You know that you don't even need a reason for attraction. That attraction is just there, and you know that it is going to happen, that attraction is going to be hormonal, emotional, and physical. And these things can provide very stabilizing substance to your relationships. And I know the world talks shit about relationships that are based on sexual attraction or the need and value of good sex in a relationship. For Taurus especially, but really for all of us, but for Taurus especially, that has to be present. It is a vital foundation for what you've got going on. And you're very fortunate if you are tuned into that, because it's dependable and it's rooted in biology and it's rooted in your body, which is an extension of biology. So you've had Saturn moving through Taurus, Scorpio, your opposite sign, for a couple of years. Now it's about to make its one last visit into there. And I would read that as these transits where a retrograde planet dips back into a sign for a couple of months and then back out after a long visit, to me speak of that one thing that you didn't get to that you need to resolve. Now you have the occasion to resolve it. This is very likely to be making transits against your chart, and they're probably going to say something very similar, which is when the time comes and some previous theme, subject matter, question, issue comes up, that's not a sign that this thing has appeared in such a way that it can't be, it's like, oh, it's back. No, it's back temporarily so that you can address the question there. You can, look at it. But what I mean by relationships taking on an increasingly spiritual connotation is that Saturn is going to be in Sagittarius, emphasizing your eighth house. And what this is saying is that the actual bonding force transcends the physical realm. It has its foundation in the physical realm because the relationship wouldn't be happening in the first place had you not seen, heard, touched, smelled, and tasted that person. However, there are subtler realms to make contact with as long as you remember the necessity of, the importance of, for you, a foundation in physical reality. And so Saturn is going to be moving across Sagittarius now for well over two more years, closer to 3 years. And the implication here is notice the ways in which the next phase of bonding in your relationships is on a whole other plane of reality, but which does not even vaguely negate the physical level. Now, if it does start to negate in some way the physical level, or if that changes, it may also be that the relationship itself is changing, and there is one possible manifestation of Saturn in any house, which is that it will clear that house of anything that does not belong there. And so if you begin to get signals that, for example, there is not an actual meeting of souls in a relationship sufficient to have the physical, hormonal, sexual, emotional level be safe and stable for you to notice that. And it's possible that the influence of Saturn is going to draw an end to something that is not appropriate for you. It is very unlikely that Saturn brings to an end something that is appropriate. So in that sense, you have nothing to worry about. It's only going to influence that which is not appropriate in a way that kind of brings things to closure. And plus, remember, there is this a long trip of Saturn through Sagittarius. The next two Taurus birthday readings and annual readings are going to have this as a dominant feature. So we're really just at the beginning of the story. We are at a trial phase, and I will say that transpired in your relationships in the first 5 months of the year, 4 or 5 months, will tell you a lot about the direction that things are headed. And if you don't like the way they're headed, you have time to discuss things and negotiate things. And I will add one last thought before concluding this, because it follows perfectly logically, which is that this activity in your second house, this activity of Mars and Mercury, and especially Mars retrograde, Mercury retrograde, and then both of these points square Neptune, is really about you actually figuring out what your values are. And when you know what your values are, you begin to recognize when people share your values, and you begin to recognize when people don't share your values. And so the bottom line here really seems to be whether you harmonize with people on the level of values, and by that I mean the bottom lines on what means the most to you, what is the most important to you. What is it that you can abide and cannot abide? What is it that motivates you to proceed in your life in a sane way for you? And you're going to be doing a lot of discovering that. And that is a beautiful thing about all this activity, both in Gemini in the second house, your own personal values, and Saturn moving through Sagittarius and your eighth house, this region where your values and resources merge with the values and resources of another person. The beautiful thing here is that there is a sane order of how your relationships really can work. And you have the ability to have relationships that work on a multiplicity of levels, And despite this thing about Taurians supposedly being stubborn, there is something that is just gleaming out of your charts, which is the ability to be flexible and to have a diverse, portable, multifaceted viewpoint. This, I think, is essential on Earth, where adaptation is the name of the game. If one cannot adapt, it is very hard to survive on this planet. It is very hard to get along with anyone because people are so different and they change so much. And this is not only a gift that you have, but it's one that you are now able to draw on as an active resource. And as such, don't be afraid of contention and controversy. See what it's telling you. Notice what it means. There you go. All right. Some ideas to think about. I'm going to take a little break, take a walk around my neighborhood, where I like to spend as much of my money as possible, not spend it on bookstores far away or food far away, but to support my neighbors as a conscious dharma. It's one thing I love about the neighborhood that I live in is the presence of merchants who are really, really good merchants. So that's one of the things about life and my current home that I just love. And I will leave you on that note, and I will catch you again in a digital instant.